in the limelight. Guatemalan police rescued 126 mainly Haitian migrants from an abandoned shipping container on the side of a road on Saturday, 9th of October, highlighting how the desperate flow of people from Haiti and across South America has not abated despite the recent wave of U.S. deportations. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Washington Post journalist Miriam Berger. The piece is titled, More Than 100 Haitians Found in Trailer in Guatemala as Desperate Efforts to Reach United States Continue. Guatemalan police have rescued 126 mainly Haitian migrants from an abandoned shipping container on the side of a road on Saturday, 9th of October, highlighting how the desperate flow of people from Haiti and across South America has not abated despite the recent wave of United States deportations. Guatemalan authorities said they searched the trailer around dawn after residents heard screams coming from within. The shipping container was found in an area between the towns of Nueva Concepción and Cocales in the country's south. Guatemalan police spokesman Jorge Aguilar told reporters that of the 126 undocumented people found inside the shipping container, 106 were from Haiti, 11 were from Nepal, and 9 were from Ghana, according to an Agence France-Presse report. Guatemalan police suspect that they had paid to be illegally taken to the United States via Mexico by smugglers, who instead abandoned them on the road in southern Guatemala. The treacherous journey appears to have begun in Honduras, said a spokeswoman for Guatemala's Migration Authority, Alejandra Mena. After first aid checks on the migrants and asylum seekers, Guatemalan officials said they would be deported back to Honduras and taken into custody there. Countless migrants and asylum seekers have died or been detained while taking increasingly risky routes to reach the United States. On Thursday, 7th of October, police in Mexico found 652 migrants crammed into six trailers near Mexico's border with the United States. About half of them were children, nearly 200 of whom when not accompanied by any adult. Refugee advocates have been particularly concerned about a recent surge of migrants from Haiti, the Western Hemisphere's poorest nation, that's now also facing the world's highest per capita kidnapping rate. Warring gangs already controlled significant parts of the country when President Jovenel Moïse was assassinated in July of this year, thrusting the country into further political turmoil. The Biden administration has since backed Haiti's embattled interim prime minister, Ariel Henry, who critics say would be unable to remain in power without Washington's support. Adding to the daily stress of Haitians, a 7.2 magnitude earthquake in August devastated much of the island nation's southwest. Facing increasingly dire conditions at home in Haiti and in South American countries where many Haitians fled after the 2010 earthquake, thousands of Haitian migrants have tried their luck seeking asylum and seeking work in the United States. Many of those who came in recent months said they expected to be allowed in by the Biden administration. But amid a surge at the U.S.-Mexico border, the Biden administration in mid-September began rapidly deporting thousands of Haitians from Texas to Port-au-Prince in Haiti. Some who were sent back said they had not lived in Haiti for decades. Others vowed to continue to try again to to enter the United States. The Biden administration invoked a pandemic-related measure, Title 42, to rapidly deport border crossers back to Mexico, to their home countries. Deportees, however, said no systematic coronavirus testing has been conducted, and several reported testing positive for the virus upon arrival in Haiti. Controversy erupted last month after images of horse-mounted Border Patrol agents attempting to grab migrants and push them back over the border into Mexico put the nation's focus on the unfolding humanitarian crisis at the U.S.-Mexico border. Once back in Haiti, some recent returnees have become the targets of kidnappers, amid reports that they will be carrying cash. Many of the thousands of Haitians deported in recent weeks remain stranded in Port-au-Prince. Ambassador Daniel Foote, President Biden's former special envoy for Haiti, resigned last month in protest over the U.S. government's policies towards Haitian migrants. Former Ambassador Daniel Foote told members of a House panel on Thursday that the deportation policies were inhumane and would not deter people from trying to reach the United States. Daniel Foote said, "We've always prioritized stability over going after the root causes of instability." Foote told lawmakers. He added, "I believe the root causes of instability are now that the Haitian people do not believe that they have had a voice in their destiny in selecting their leaders."
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to your listeners of IRIB English Radio. You are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing, wherein we discuss problems, issues, and other relevant questions parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. As usual, all of the information or answers provided in this program are all based upon the Holy Quran and the narrations of the household of the Prophet, and naturally, of the Prophet himself, peace be upon them all. Joining us in the studio, as usual, is our very dear friend and guest speaker, Sayyid Abdullah al-Musawi, who is an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, I welcome you and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. Our topic is a continuation of the previous session's topic of the etiquette of rewarding our children in a proper manner. Dear Sayyid, please enlighten us.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajahum. So previously we were talking about the concept of this system of reward.
Right.
And we got to the point that we said there are two types of reward, a positive one and a negative one.
Right.
And we said the positive itself is in different branches. So we said there is a materialistic reward, like money, stuff like that, things
right.
they can feel and touch. We said a form of activity, going out with them, sports, and watching TV, or you
right.
know, what have you. And there is what we call a social reward. Right. Well, the social reward is very neglected. And what I mean by social reward, I'm going to give you an example. So this concept of social rewards becomes a lot clearer. One, giving them attention, right? So the child is trying, for example, he's trying to talk or he's trying to do something himself. And, for example, you give them eye contact. You shake your head
right.
As in a form of agreement. You smile in their faces.
Communicating, basically.
Yeah, so you use facial expressions. That, for example, I'm talking to you now and you're nodding your head.
Right.
Right, so this to me, that's a form of reward. Like, yeah, I agree with you. Like, all right, cool. What else? Right? So it's a form of what? It's in subconsciously, it's a form of reward.
Right.
When children do it, most of the times we just don't care. We just like they're talking, they're doing something, and we're just looking away from them.
Unfortunately,
right? We're not paying attention to them
because we think that they're just blabbering about some
yeah.
random stuff in their
yeah.
classroom, and we don't care.
Exactly. Like now, I'm talking to you. If I don't look at you while I'm talking, you will look. Why isn't he looking at me? It's like it's disrespectful.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right? It's like, I mean, but if I look at you, look, okay, you know what? There is something between us.
He's engaged, at least.
Exactly. So this engagement is a form of a social reward.
Right.
Right? So that we need to keep in mind. So smiling, shaking your hand as an agreement with them, looking in their eyes to prove to them that you are with them. And sometimes attention is what they need the most, especially
right.
with kids.
Right.
right? Also, for example, in the form of love, hugging them, right? Patting on the back, wiping their heads,
or maybe just telling them,
right?
Right?
Telling them I love you.
That's very rare.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh mashallah, I love you so much for doing so. That itself, it's a very huge reward to them, mentally and emotionally,
right.
that most of us lack. When we were kids, and a lot of kids these days lack that.
Right.
Right. I mean, I've seen in some cultures, mashallah, they have so many sweet words that they use with their kids. Like, my love, my life, my heart, my this, my that.
Right.
That itself, you know, it increases their, I don't know, their hormones in their body, the good type,
of
right?
Course,
they start to release dopamine and they feel good about themselves. This is a form
they feel happy.
Of reward.
Right.
When they feel happy, dopamine being released in your brain just by saying I love you.
Right.
Yeah.
So valuable. Dear Sayyid, we will take a quick break.
I am a Muslim, Islam my deen. Allah, my Lord, His word, Quran, Muhammad, Prophet, peace be upon him. I am a Muslim for all of time.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing the etiquette of rewarding our children. Dear Sayyid, please continue the discussion.
So we were talking about the social reward. So we said showing that attention that you care, showing love, and we gave
displays of affection.
Yeah, and affection. Also, in a form of, how should I put the word? Making it more physical, like clapping for them.
Right.
Clap. Right? They do something, you clap for them, especially the young ones. Why say yeah? And you clap your hand.
Right.
You see, the child just gets motivated all of a sudden, and he's
exactly,
he
yeah,
wants to continue
yeah,
doing his thing.
So just stimulate their senses.
Exactly. Just clapping or writing their names on the board, on the fridge. Like he comes, he said, "Oh, today I, I got A in my exam, for example. Or even right, I got C or D." He encourages them. Like, you know what? Oh, so nice. I'm gonna stick it on the fridge.
Right.
I'm gonna put your name, and that's why you see in the schools, for example, they give you a star.
Exactly.
I mean, even a star does nothing. It's just a sticker. But even that sticker itself makes a lot of sense. And mind you, this same method has been used on us as grown-ups.
Right.
Now, give you an example. When we play games, they give us stars.
Achievements
or
stuff.
I don't know if you're familiar with Angry Birds.
Right.
Getting 5 stars. Now, most of my friends, they play the game, right? They get like they hit the pigs and the pigs fall and stuff, but they get 3 stars. They can move to the next one. Like no, I gotta get 5. And he's a grown up, so even as grown ups, this still works on me and you.
Of course,
that we have to be we are motivated by stars and by numbers. That means nothing,
right.
And I take it as a reward for me. How about a child? A child will be more to him. It will be more meaningful,
more magnificent,
especially coming.
Right.
From their parents. So putting their names on the board, I don't know, clapping for them, thanking them personally, greeting them. You know, sometimes as parents, we wait for the child to say salam alaikum to me in the morning.
Right.
Or good morning, dad.
Because I'm the elder one.
Yeah. Well, it would be nice if the father says, good morning, son, comes and hugs him and gives him a kiss.
Right.
It makes a has a different notion. Or sometimes the parents always expecting their kids to call them. It's nice.
This is horrible, yeah.
Yeah, it's nice for the parents for once in a while to call their kids their own.
Well, we do have a narration, if I may interrupt you, just to add on this point of Imam Ja'far Sadiq, alayhi salam, saying that a right the parent have over their child is them keeping contact.
Mm.
And a right that the child has over their parents is also them keeping contact.
Exactly.
So it goes both ways.
Exactly.
Right.
So we always say that the phone works both ways.
Exactly.
Yes, it works on your side, it works on my side. So we need to keep that when it comes to social reward. Also, using words, right? Using words of encouragement, like bravo, excellent, wonderful
right,
job. As even say in Arabic, barakallah fik, jazakallah khair. Right? Using these words as form of encouragement. Now, even grown-ups, me and you, we expect that as well. We do something, and I'm expecting someone to say to me at the end of it, jazakallah khair, ahsantum, barakallah, muwaffaqeen. These words, we use them with each other. In fact, they are a system of, social reward that I'm giving it to you, and you feel good about yourself. If we finish this recording and we go home and no one says thank you to us, not that we need it,
right,
but we feel a bit like,
Exactly, yeah.
But if
yeah,
if the producer says thank you, even though we don't need that thank you, it makes you feel that the person appreciates your work.
Right, yeah.
So as grown-ups and as adults, we need this. How about a child?
Exactly.
They also need these words of
encouragement. It's even more crucial for a child.
Yeah,
right?
Just say ahsantum or ahsant will do the trick.
Right. Dear listeners, we will go on a quick break.
Ya muqiy al khayrat, ya muqiy al khayrat.
Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam said, a child's right is to be kind to him when educating him, forgiving him, covering his mistakes, acting moderately towards him, and helping him.
Ya Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbeat. Today we are discussing the whole system of reward and the etiquette of reward. Dear Sayyid, please enlighten us even further.
We were talking about the system of reward, and we were talking about the social reward, which we said most parents neglect.
Right.
There's just one more thing I'd like to mention when it comes to social reward, and that's something social itself, being socially, like praising them in front of their comrades, in front of their friends, in front of their peers.
Right.
Which makes a huge difference to them. When I see my child with his friends and he does something good, and I say, well done, son, for example, or give him some sort of reward verbal in front of his friend, that will make him have such a high self-esteem.
Right.
And build his confidence in himself.
Exactly.
So much so that the parents wouldn't even know, right? The same thing will work if you, I think we mentioned that before, if you talk badly or punish them in front of their friends, will do the opposite effect. It will break them down.
Exactly.
But to elevate them up and push their spirit and their self-esteem higher, you try to thank them in front of their friends. And in fact, that works so well that the child tries to do double the work next time,
right,
he himself, because he sees that not only his father thanked him, but in front of his friends, which will make his friends, one, jealous of his dad or of him.
Right.
Like, oh, look, his dad is cool. I've heard so many times from kids, like, oh, his dad is cool. Or I had many kids come to me and like, I wish you were my dad, because I give them so much attention that they lack at home. Like, I wish you were my dad. And it breaks my heart when I hear this.
That's sad.
Right?
You're saying that.
So I'm like, if the parents themselves were giving this to their kids, they wouldn't be seeking it from someone else, from a stranger, for example.
Exactly.
Or from their teachers. Or from, I don't know, God knows who. So if it's said to them in a public arena, it acts as a social reward as well. And they need that the most.
It also builds up their personality, this persona that they're working on.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And like I said, through this way, they will do more good from their own will. They will be much better people. They will behave themselves in the house. They will always try to respect their parents because they see their father is always respecting them as well.
Exactly.
So this is just the last point I wanted to mention when it comes to the third type of positive reward. So when it comes to positive reward, we have materialistic reward. That's one. And two, activity reward. And three, social reward.
Right.
These three things, the parents need to balance them very well with their kids, not to rely on one and neglect the other. Now, with most parents, they are very materialistic in the rewards that they neglect the social reward,
right,
which the child sometimes needs more. He needs that attention. He needs that care. He needs that love. He needs that nice word. He needs the, you know, bravo, excellent,
right,
good
right.
work. Being praised in front of his friends and stuff like that. They need this more for their self-building than all the toys that you can give them.
Right.
And you give them a phone now, and 6 months is going to be expired, old. He breaks it in 2-3 days.
Right.
Give him a toy, it will be over. Like, once he's good, once that fun goes out of the door, then there's nothing left in it.
Right.
But a nice word stays with them forever.
Sticks with them, yeah.
Even the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa sallam has a hadith. He says, when a man says to his wife, I love you, never leaves her heart.
Right, yeah.
A good word leaves its mark on a person.
Right.
So is a bad word, right?
Right.
So when it comes to these things, the parents really need to balance the scales between being materialistic, activity, or social reward.
Exactly, exactly. And on that note, I will unfortunately have to end today's program. Dear Sayyid, I thank you for your insightful knowledge, and also thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. As usual, if our dear listeners have any feedback, questions, or some suggestions, they can, as usual, contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir. They can also find us on the various social media websites of, for example, Facebook and Instagram, under the call handle of Call of Islam Radio. Thank you for tuning in.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. ¶¶
food for thought.
Hello everyone, and how about listening to a mind-stimulating aphorism from the Holy Prophet's 11th infallible heir, Imam Hassan Askari, peace be upon him. To greet everyone you pass by and to sit in a place other than the first row of a section are signs of modesty.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Saudi Arabia, since the rise of Mohammed bin Salman as the de facto leader, the country has embarked on a senseless kind of adventurism across the region. The young prince's aggressive performance in the theater of politics has almost backfired, exposing the kingdom to retaliatory responses from other regional actors. The result has been embarrassing for a country that considered itself as the leader of the Arab world, hence apparently the main supporter of the Palestinian nation. In order to protect its own soil against its newly unnecessarily made enemies, the Saudis are now seeking to purchase missile systems from Palestine's number one enemy, namely the Israeli regime.
is one of the major importers of arms, and at the same time as a country with one of the weakest armies in the world, Saudi Arabia is now keen on having Israel's Iron Dome. According to Breaking Defense, Riyadh is considering Israeli-made missile systems seriously as never before. The timing is, of course, of considerable significance, as the Saudis have sought to procure the Iron Dome for a few years, but this time, their interest has reached a very practical phase. This level of military interaction cannot happen overnight. That's why Saudi Arabia and the Israeli regime don't have formal relations with each other. In the Muslim world, the Saudis are accused of having intelligence cooperation, at least for some years, with the Israelis, and the Iron Dome purchase might act as corroborative evidence.
Now, according to sources, the Saudi interest in the Israeli Iron Dome has reached a practical phase, and this in many ways can be seen as representative of the overall alliance between the two regimes, which hasn't been made public yet, but apparently there have been talks between the two regimes for years, including on this so-called security and defense issue, as they call it. So it doesn't really come as a surprise, given that there has been an increasing diplomatic as well as a military, at least from an ideological point of view, harmonization between the two regimes.
In the absence of American Thaad and Patriot batteries, which recently were removed from Prince Sultan Amir base, the Saudis are scrambling to find new missile systems. But experts believe the situation is much more complicated, with the odds heavily against the kingdom.
The United States has just in recent weeks removed its most advanced missile defense structure system from Saudi Arabia. And of course, we should also see this within the context of the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, which may have caused some nervous reactions among the U.S. allies in the Gulf, including Saudi Arabia and its close allies there. And then, of course, at the same time, there have been continuous responses from Yemen against Saudi Arabia in retaliation for its attacks on Yemen. So the Saudi regime is confronted with challenges, but trying to keep its quite a powerful position through new configurations.
In recent months, Ansarullah has dealt great blows to the Saudi-led coalition forces. After years of bombing and targeting Yemeni civilians and infrastructure, the Saudis have found themselves vulnerable against Yemen's homemade drones. And disappointed by what the kingdom is in position of, Saudi Arabia is going to try its luck this time with Israeli missile systems. Those systems already tested and of course failed against retaliatory attacks from Gaza. In other words, like the American Patriot missile systems, the Israeli Iron Dome system's combat performance has grossly been exaggerated. Meanwhile, Tel Aviv has always asserted that it would help the enemies of Iran, particularly in terms of intelligence and military equipment. Helping the Saudis against Yemen's Ansarullah, who have launched successful retaliatory attacks against Saudi targets, and trying to back the kingdom up in the face of the Islamic Republic of Iran, is just one side of the coin. The other side is without doubt marketing and milking a rich customer such as Saudi Arabia. And the embarrassing point is Riyadh's plan to obtain equipment from a regime it is supposed to be at loggerheads with.
The Israeli regime has, of course, been marketing its military equipment and technologies, including surveillance technologies internationally that it has tested on Palestinians for many years. That includes different mechanisms for the perpetuation of state violence that are presented as defense and security. And it has provided oppressive regimes all over the world with different sorts of methods to facilitate human rights violations, surveillance, and the control and containment of different populations, in particular minority populations. So the Saudi regime would be just one of many oppressive regimes that is actually buying technology from the Israeli regime for so-called security and defense purposes.
News of the procurement of the Iron Dome comes a few years after denials by both Riyadh and Tel Aviv. According to the Israeli news outlet Haaretz, the Saudis, as well as its allies, including the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain, sought to buy the Iron Dome for the second time in September 2019. Now the procurement is by and large being interpreted as a prelude to the normalization, or as some critics put it, the publicization of relations between the two sides.
So these latest developments could definitely be another prelude to the normalization or to the publicization of the relations between the Saudi and the Israeli regime. So there has been a normalization, so-called, to some extent, and it needs to be seen when and how an official publicization would take place. But Saudi has, of course, backed the normalization between the Zionist entity and the dictatorships in Bahrain and UAE that took place in 2020. And the Saudi and Israeli regimes have been collaborating and doing that more and more openly in recent years, and have on numerous occasions actually expressed their solidarity with one another.
Yoel Gozansky from Tel Aviv University's Institute for National Security Studies, INSS, has recently pointed out Israel would do the right thing by offering the Saudi kingdom assistance in defending its strategic facilities against a growing threat from Iran. All in all, this is not a surprising development going on between the Saudi kingdom and the Israeli regime. The ugly alliance between the two sides has been built upon confronting popular demands, including freedom and democracy, across the region, and in particular in both Saudi Arabia and the occupied territories.
Of course, Israel is a very useful ally here, and not to forget, of course, that these regimes, Saudi, Israel, and other U.S. proxies, have their existence as oppressive regimes which are embedded in Western framework, guaranteed to a large extent on their transactional relation with the United States. So obviously they would, to that extent, collaborate amongst each other.
As two destabilizing forces in the region, the chemistry between the two sides is to some extent based on the oppression-destruction strategy and a need for constant militarization as a result of that. The Saudis have been attacking their neighboring Muslim country for the past few years, the first heinous sin, and then asking for help from another Muslim nation's enemy, the second unforgivable sin, while calling itself the leader of the Muslim world. The anti-Iranian rhetoric provides the two sides with a pretext to justify their alliance, what was hard to even imagine a decade ago.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful, dear brothers and sisters, Salamun Alaikum, and so welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. I invite you to be with us during this episode. We're going to speak about the concept of responsibility of men and women in Islam.
Thank you.
Let's see what date is today. Today, Tuesday, is the 5th of Rabiul Awwal, 1443, of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 20th of Mehr, 1400, of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 12th of October, 2021, of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Let's open Allah's book, the Holy Quran, and for today we choose chapter At-Tawbah, verse 71. Let's listen to it.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم والمؤمنون والمؤمنات بعضهم أولياء بعض يأمرون بالمعروف وينهون عن المنكر ويقيمون الصلاة ويؤتون الزكاة ويطيعون الله ورسوله أولئك سيرحمهم الله إن الله عزيز حكيم.
The believing men and believing women are allies of one another. They enjoin what is right and forbid what is wrong, and establish prayer and give zakah, and obey Allah and His Messenger. Those, Allah will have mercy upon them. Indeed, Allah is exalted in might and wise.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The signs of true believers, men and women, have been mentioned in the verse under discussion. At first, it implies that they invite people to good. They also restrain people from vices, wickedness, and unlawful things. Contrast to the hypocrites, who usually forget Allah, the believers always establish prayer. Keep the remembrance of Allah, and consequently by this remembrance and the name of Allah, they cause their hearts to be light and their minds to be aware.
Reflecting on different Islamic topics, short commentary of the Holy Quran, hadiths of the infallibles, lessons from the life of the infallibles, all in today's special from IRIB English Radio.
Allah, yeah, Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah. Yeah, Allah, yeah, Allah.
As the previous episode of today's special, we follow the concept of responsibility of men and women in Islam. Surely Allah the Most High created men and gave him life for a certain time. He gave him wisdom, strength, free will, wealth of course, to enable him to use them in doing good and useful deeds, obtaining knowledge and worshipping him. If man wastes these blessings and bounties without taking any advantage of Islam, undoubtedly he will be held responsible for them on the resurrection day. Accordingly, man must be aware of his responsibility. He must feel a responsibility to Allah on the resurrection day. Thus, Allah the Almighty will hold him to account on that day for the wealth that he gave him and how he obtained and used it. Did he obtain it? Through lawful means like agriculture, industry, trading, and the like, or through unlawful ways like deceiving others, robbery, oppression, and the like? If he earned it through unlawful actions, his lot will be punishment and torture. If his wealth was gained through lawful means, most surely Allah will reward him and be pleased with him.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bin astain. In this episode, we are going to be concerned with discharging our responsibilities as viewed in the Islamic religion. Another kind of sensing responsibility concerns our parents. We find that everybody is expected to treat the parents with utmost respect and utmost kindness, because it has been our parents who have raised us, and any kind of blessings or any kind of success that we receive, this is because of the kind of education we have received from them. At the same time, we find that according to a piece of hadith issued by the sixth infallible Imam, Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam, we find that children are expected to be, to be watchful regarding the needs of the parents. It isn't enough that when our parents say their needs to us, that we give them support. No, we have to think and we have to act prior to the expression of the needs to us. According to Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam, who recommended one of his disciples and companions to be as kind and cooperative to his parents, such that this kind of support, I mean personal support, would act as a shield against the hellfire on the day of resurrection. Another kind of sensing responsibility is concerned with our occupations, our jobs, and the way we earn our living. Everybody is expected to be very much concerned with giving the right support and attention to his or her job. Because of this, I mean, everybody is expected to be able to discharge his or her responsibilities in the best way, such that when accomplishing any task or mission is entrusted to someone, there wouldn't be any need to nominate someone else in order to oversee the desirable procedure of fulfilling any task. Everybody should do his or her job as best as possible.
Now, responsibility towards other people. Man has social character, yeah? Life is based on interaction and communication between people, we know. They share many things, and together they form their family and society. Man is born alone to live with others in harmony. Allah Almighty says in the Holy Quran, O mankind, lo, we have created you from a male and female and have made you nations and tribes that you may know one another. Lo, the noblest of you in the sight of Allah is the best in conduct. Lo, Allah is knower, aware. Chapter 49, verse 13. To live in harmony and to work together, Allah the Almighty established rules and laws in every aspect of life to facilitate people in their relations with each other. These rules precisely determine the rights of the individual according to his position, status, and totality of his traits.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio.
May this moment last forever in your hearts, a day you'll always remember every part.
Today's a special.
This feeling of love, just let it grow forever through your life. Bring beautiful years of joy between you till the end of time.
This is today's special, and we're speaking about social responsibility in Islam. The reform of society was the main target of Islam. even acts of worship contribute to the achieving of this reform. Within the framework of human society, the Islamic nation is a compact union having resource to itself, possessing an inner sense of responsibility for its own members, and resisting decay both individually and collectively. According to the Prophet of Islam, Muhammad al-Mustafa, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him and his family, every one of you is a shepherd, and every one of you will be questioned about those under his rule. A ruler is a shepherd, and he will be questioned about his subjects. The man is a shepherd in his family, and he will be questioned about those under his care. And the woman is a shepherd in the house of her husband, and she will be questioned about those under her care. Thus, every one of you is a shepherd and is responsible for those under his care.
لا تجوز قدم عبد يوم القيامة حتى يسأل عن أربع عن عمره فيما أفناه. How did you spend your time? Were you responsible in the society, or you just came to eat, drink, enjoy, have fun, and then you go? This is the life of animals. والذين كفروا يأكلون ويتمتعون كما تأكل الأنعام. Animals, they are worried about their food and their drink. But we are different. We have been endowed with a responsibility. God said this responsibility, asked the universe to undertake this responsibility, they failed. إِنَّا عَرَضْنَا الْأَمَانَةَ عَلَى السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ وَالْجِبَالِ فَأَبَيْنَا أَنْ يَحْمِلْنَهَا وَأَشْفَقْنَا مِنْهَا وَحَمَلَهَا الْإِنسَانِ إِنَّهُ كَانَ ظَلُومًا جَهُولًا. We said to the mountains, to the heaven, to the earth, take this responsibility. They declined. They said, sorry, we can't. فَأَبَيْن. Why? The mountain is not strong enough. The mountain physically is stronger than you and me. The earth is not strong enough. It is. But when it comes to the spiritual capacity, you are stronger. You have more capacity. You are bigger. You are bigger than mountains. You are bigger than the earth. You are bigger than the oceans. They don't have that spiritual capacity.
Dear brothers and sisters, thank you very much for joining us. That was all for today's special. Till another episode, Fi Amanillah.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.